So regardless of where you are in the world, this period in our lives, it's difficult during the pandemic. Everyone, everywhere has different challenges, some greater than others, but all of them are real. For regular listeners of the podcast, you know that I live in Ireland, and once again, we are back in a full lockdown just after Christmas. Schools are closed. We can't travel more than 5 kilometers from our house. And at the time of recording this, it's looking like this is going to be going on for quite a few months. Now, I consider myself a relatively stable individual with good personal habits around sleep, exercise, diet, and all those things. And yet, I have many days where I start to feel like I'm cracking up. So I can only imagine the challenges, the stress, and potentially the trauma that this might be inflicting on young people who even before this pandemic struggled in life with stressful environments. And so today we have Megan Bartlett on the podcast, who's the founder of Weak Coach. She's a friend of Dr. Bruce Perry, the world's leading trauma psychologist, who came on the podcast in episodes 126 and 127 to share some brain science with us. She's also a previous guest in episode 116 of the Coaching Culture podcast. Weak Coach works with communities in 3 areas. They focus on sports-based youth development, trauma-informed sport, and women in sport. But today, we're going to dive into the trauma of sport. We're going to discuss the impact of the repeated stress of the pandemic and how that impacts our athletes and ourselves and what we can do about it. Welcome to the Coaching Culture podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. Megan, it is great to have you back on the podcast. It's not common that we have repeat guests, but I had to reach out because we consider you one of our stress experts, and the last year has been stressful, to say the least, potentially even traumatic for some. During this pandemic, you know, it's been really, really challenging for athletes, for coaches, and parents. So to start off today, my first question for you is, how might this pandemic have traumatic effects on young people?
JP, thanks. And I'm glad to be back. I also feel very flattered to be one of the only people who's come back twice. That's high praise from you guys. So yes, we have all had more stress than we probably had in the past over the last year, and a lot of compounding stress, coming at us from lots of different ways. I think, you know, if we look at the way that stress affects young people more broadly, we actually have a pretty good sense of what this pandemic might do to some people, right? We know what overwhelming stress can do. We know what prolonged stress can do. And how it affects young people. And I think we are in this, everyone's certainly dealing with it in different ways, but we're in this time where it's not just sort of acute stress. It's prolonged for lots of people. It's acute and prolonged for lots of people. It looks, you know, overwhelming in lots of ways for lots of folks. And so what we know about that is that it can affect the way young people respond to even manageable stress in their lives, right? We know that when you are in a state of survival for extended periods of time, your brain can stay that way, you know, and you can start reacting to things that really would be sort of manageable and normal, using air quotes there, in regular time. It starts to be the way you react all the time. And I think when the way that plays out in sport is that we're going to have young people showing up to the court, showing up to the field, and not having the same sort of stress tolerance that they had before, and not being able to be as resilient to stress as they were before, because they just haven't had as much opportunity to keep that up, and because of the extra stress they've been experiencing.
what do you think that will look like? You know, as players start to return to the court or to the field, coaches come out of hibernation and we start working with athletes again. Hopefully the world is getting closer to becoming back to normal, quote unquote. But what specifically, you know, types of behaviors and stressors do you think that will be different challenges for coaches than what we were dealing with a year ago?
Yeah, it's a great question, Nate. And I think, you know, every young person's behavior looks different. So I wish there was like a one sort of recipe for this. But I do think we know there are some trends. We know that it looks like hypervigilance, right? And hypervigilance might look different in different kinds of kids. But the reaction to sort of those critical moments in your sport where maybe a young person was sort of resilient enough to take that last second shot, now they're going to start second guessing themselves, or now they're going to start not being able to sort of maintain their focus. Right? I think that's one of the things that we'll see a lot of is in what looks to us like an inability to maintain focus, when in fact it's some kind of hypervigilance of, am I okay? Is this safe? Am I, you know, sort of over-checking the surroundings and making sure that folks feel safe. The other kind of behaviors we know we see with young people who've been exposed to overwhelming stress can look explosive, right? It can look like a short fuse for young people, right? They get bumped under the boards, or they get a foul called on them that they don't like, and that feels more threatening than it would under other circumstances, and their reaction then sort of fits that sort of disproportionate impact. So it can be explosive. It could be a little bit hypervigilant. And with other kids, we know that they're more likely to sort of shut down or tune out or pull back, right? So the kids who are, I don't want to do this anymore, or this is, you know, insert colorful language here, and sort of, you know, storming off the field or storming off the court, you know, being subbed out and kicking a chair, those kinds of things, I think we will see more of from young people, and not because they're intending to be, not because they're intending to be disrespectful, or even because they're not happy to be there. They, I imagine, will be very happy to be back in most cases, but the ability to deal with what happens in your body because of that extra stress, I think we'll have to manage as coaches, and it'll be a non-linear process getting them back to sort of where they were.
This is really tough because as coaches, we kind of want to have certain standards in our program and on the way we do things. We don't want to tolerate these behaviors that are unacceptable. At the same time, we've got to kind of have a little bit of empathy in those moments, right? I mean, I just think that's really, really important. You know, it's just a hard situation to monitor, you know, and we're going to dive into some of the ways that maybe coaches can approach that a little bit later. But I think as coaches, we probably need to take a step back and now more than ever realize the priority, you know, and that is the person. Not winning, not, you know, this season, we got to, you know, let's go chase that championship, or this season, you know, I hope I get over 500, or whatever it is that, you know, we're trying to do. Now more than ever, we have to put the person first if we're going to help them. Right. And you and what kind of our conversation that led to us doing this podcast was, you know, we were emailing back and forth, and you said to me that you think that those who play sports are going to do better than those that do not play sports. Can you explain that potential value that sports are offering young people today in the pandemic that, you know, really should be encouraging for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right, JP, about the fact that, you know, as coaches, it is on us more than ever to sort of step back and prioritize the person. And I think the best thing about that for lots of coaches is that by doing that, it will actually allow us to do the, are we going to be over 500? Are we going to chase the championship? Are we going to, you know, because I think if we don't do that, then we really won't be in a position to worry about the other kinds of outcomes we're used to worrying about, right? If we don't prioritize young people as people, then we're going to end up having a much harder time getting them to perform the way that we want them to perform, getting them to behave the way we want them to behave, getting them sort of back to normal, again, you know, with the air quotes there. But so I think you're right that that absolutely has to be our priority. And if the only motivation you have as a coach to have that be your priority is to get back to sort of winning and doing those things, that's okay, right? As long as we can help folks see the connection between those two things, right? It isn't, I always get a little frustrated by the fact that when we talk about putting people first, people think that's in direct contrast to winning. And in fact, it's actually a method towards winning, right? I think it's one of the building blocks that you use to get to the winning and all those other pieces. And particularly now, it's going to be one of those methods of getting back towards the ability to learn how to compete and learn how to compete well and learn how to, you know, be the best basketball, soccer, football, baseball player you can be. I think that's directly tied to the question of why young people who play sports are going to do better than young people who don't. I would like to argue that that's true. And the first reason is because they'll be more active than kids who aren't, right? One of the things that I think is really scary about this pandemic is the lack of physical activity that some young people are able to get, the ways it's kept kids from being active in the ways that they usually are, right? All those sort of things that we relied on as ways to be active are having to be rethought. And there's lots of creative things going on, and some people are able to stay really active in their homes, or they're able to access outdoor space, and some kids aren't. Right. And so that exacerbates a inequity that I think we will see sort of almost be on fire for a lot of kids moving forward. But the ones who can stay active will do better. And that's just the sheer impact of physical activity on the brain. Right? Just without anything else, being active helps us be regulated. And when stress is dysregulating, physical activity is regulating without anything else. So if kids are moving their bodies, then the chance that they'll be more resilient to stress goes up. The second one, I think, is exactly what you're talking about in terms of prioritizing the person. And that's how beneficial trusting relationships can be for young people, right? In lots of cases, young people are feeling for the first time like they have no control over what's safe and what's not, then the presence of trusting adults who help them be safe is incredibly powerful, right? We know that relationships are such an important part of how a young person feels safe, and that will, you know, more than anything, the relationships are the things that help buffer young people from stress. When you had Bruce on, I'm sure he talked about the fact that we know that relational health is actually more important in a young person's outcomes than adversity, than the experience of adversity. Adversity, we know, can have really negative impacts on young people, and that's what we're all dealing with right now. But the ones who do the best will be the ones who have a profile of relational health, who have parents and friends and siblings and other adults in their lives, and particularly for some kids, coaches, who can make sure that they are staying connected and feeling safe. So physical activity and relationships. And then I think the other piece that's so important here, and one of the things that I think we're really missing out on for kids in this pandemic, and one of the things that something like a pandemic where you feel like you have no control really puts in stark relief, is that in sport, there are manageable patterns of stress that young people experience all the time, right? And manageable patterns of stress is how we build resilience, right? When stress is prolonged, chaotic, or out of our control, then it creates vulnerability. But when stress is controlled, moderate, and predictable, then it creates resilience. And so sport, even in the way we teach skills, in the way we practice pressure situations, in the way that we, assuming we're doing it right, in the way that we help young people, you know, become better at their sport, those are manageable patterns of stress. And every time they experience those manageable patterns of stress, they're building resilience to the uncontrolled, overwhelming, and chaotic stress in other parts of their lives.
Megan, I want to follow up just for a minute on that issue of connection, because I think with a lot of the coaches in our community who have been shut down at a variety of times in the last year, where their contacts with their players, at least in person, have been limited. Maybe they've been in virtual school, so they don't see them in the hallways or in their classes. I know that there is a hunger for coaches to want to be able to persevere in those relationships. But I think sometimes we don't even understand the value of the little things that we can do as coaches. And I remember Dr. Perry talking about the consistency of relationship being so valuable. Mm-hmm. If you were going to share with coaches the things that can really matter during times like this, when you don't have consistent contact in terms of face-to-face or being in practice or what have you, what are some of the things that coaches can do that really do matter and allow those relationships to persist with their players?
Yeah, thanks, Nate. That's a great question. I think, and I'm sure, and you're right, this piece about consistency matters a lot. And it's something we're hearing a lot from coaches, is that it's been not easier. There are certainly challenges to staying connected with young people who they can't see in the same ways that you're just saying, and all that informal time that they might have when they just happen to pass a kid in the hallways, or when they just happen to, you know, sort of the bus time before a game, the locker room time, all that stuff goes away. And so some of our built-in consistency of relationships goes away with that. But I think coaches are struggling with this for sure. And even harder is creating new relationships with young people, right? And so if you're supposed to, you know, if a young person moves up in an age group, or if they're joining a new team, or they were supposed to have joined a new team last March, and now they've only ever known their teammates and their coach virtually or at a social distance, that is a real challenge. You know, developing those relationships anew is really challenging. I think one of the things that it's important to remember for coaches is that we're probably putting more pressure on ourselves than we should be, right? And one of the things that we've found really resonates with coaches is that we have to remember that the little things matter, right? We have to remember that the 30-second interaction with a young person via text or emails or TikTok videos, whatever it is, those things actually really do add up. And because they don't look like the things we're used to them looking like those 30 seconds in the hallway, I think it's been trying to think about how were you interacting with young people, and what's the equivalence, probably not the right word, but what's the virtual version of that? And knowing that even those 30-second interactions, even those 10-second text messages, that those matter and those add up, I think is really important. So doing a 90-minute online practice because you used to do 90-minute, you know, in-person practices may not be the answer. And trying to be creative about how do we find all of the other things that sort of add up to what that whole experience was like, I think those are the things that end up making the difference, both from coach to players, but also how we can facilitate time for players to be with each other as well. The best thing a coach can do now is remember, I think of it sort of like a scale. Every little sort of moment where a young person is feeling unsafe now, or they're seeing something on the news that bums them out, or they're, you know, sort of that weight is getting heavier and heavier, then every small positive interaction that a coach has can help sort of tip those scales back towards the other, you know, back towards equal. And I think that is what we forget. We forget that those little things add up too, right? In the same way that the little things add up on the bad side, they add up on the good side too.
That's just such a great reminder. I mean, there's so much pressure on coaches to be creative and run all these amazing team meetings. But you're just reminding me that it's not so much about what we do as how we show up. Can we show up? Can we be present, ask great questions, and help people to feel seen and to feel cared for? Now, another question I wanted to ask you was, you know, we're talking about the stress of the pandemic. Like, there's a lot of it. There's all this unknown, especially for coaches and athletes that are actually in season right now. I think a lot of them are starting to wonder, is this worth it? Like, is this healthy? Like, the stress of actually having a season sometimes seems much greater than not having a season. I mean, 1 minute, you know, a team's told, yeah, your season's canceled. No, it's back on. Well, it's shortened. That's difficult. There's also so much additional protocols and paperwork and extra things that people have to do, players and coaches and parents, to make this safe and for us to be compliant. Teams are having games canceled last second, then rescheduled with other teams. Players are having to quarantine or self-isolate anytime they have an exposure. To actually have a sports season, it's really, really stressful. So what do you think about the idea of just saying, hey, let's just cancel sports for the year and let's get things back up and running next year?
JP, I think that's a really, I'm sure that's really very real for a lot of coaches, and very present. And it's not surprising that it would add sort of a disproportionate amount of stress onto what's going on, right? So it's already stressful to think, how am I going to do my sport differently than I'm used to doing it? It's already stressful to think, am I going to be safe? Are my kids going to be safe? Is this the right call? And then to go through sort of the roller coaster of how this is actually going to work, and is this actually going to work, and just sort of living in that unpredictability is sort of adding more stress on top of stress. Because one of my favorite definitions of the experience of trauma, I know it's weird to have a favorite definition of the experience of trauma, but one of my favorite definitions of the experience of trauma is that trauma is the wrenching away of control when you need it the most. And I think one of the things that's so profound about this pandemic is that lack of control, is that lack of predictability, right? If we knew when this would be over, we could come up with strategies for getting through the next 6 weeks or 6 months or whatever, you know, and if it felt like we were making progress the whole time, right? If we were getting better and better, then things would feel more predictable, feel more controllable, and we could sort of wrap our hands around it and cope in ways that we haven't been able to do because it has been this roller coaster, because it's been this up and down, because it's, oh, the numbers are better now, so we think we can go out of these restrictions, and then we have to go right back into the restrictions. And that lack of predictability is a stress in and of itself. And I think that's why for a lot of folks, just being able to say, you know what, this season is not going to be the way, you know, like this, we're not going to do it this year. We're going to hope for the best and get through to next year has actually been a relief for some folks. That doesn't mean you don't still grieve. And that doesn't mean that there aren't still people for whom I was on the phone with some athletes from my alma mater, and they were seniors and they just missed their fall season I was a soccer player, and they just didn't have a senior year in college. Right. And they're not the kind of athletes who are going to go on to play professional sports. It just didn't happen. It's just gone and it will never come back. So that you can grieve that, right? That is a huge loss. But actually, knowing from the get-go that they weren't going to have a season was actually much easier for them than, say, what this winter has been like, where the basketball teams thought they might have a season, and then they were going to have a modified season, and then they were going to have in-person practice, and then they were going to have, you know, then they couldn't have in-person practice, and they closed the gym, and, like, you know, I think that was harder. And that's because of that lack of control. That's the inability to sort of bite off chunks and say, this is what I'm in control of right now. This is what I know is that manageable, predictable pattern of stress, as opposed to that overwhelming, chaotic, and unpredictable stress.
So, Megan, I'm curious, in response to that, you know, one of the conversations that we commonly have with coaches are about the negative effects of just what we're describing here. You know, mm-hmm. Dr. Perry talks about the misery of uncertainty sometimes mm-hmm. being worse than the misery of certainty. But I'm wondering, you know, given that the pandemic is outside of our control, it is unpredictable in terms of how long it's going to last and what the lasting effects are going to be. The stress for some might be moderate, for others might be more intense. Yet, are there lessons that can be learned mm-hmm. that come from this unique challenge? And when I think about, you know, again, working with young people and coaching our team, is there a way that coaches can frame the experience to, even though we don't know when it will end, to be able to anticipate some of the challenge, to be able to tell a story, you know, that leads to perseverance and that leads to life lessons coming out of this, even though so much of it is outside of our control?
Yeah, I think so. The short answer is absolutely. And if we miss that opportunity, we've really blown it, I think. You know, I hope that for most young people, their lives won't feel as out of control as we've all felt over the last year. But that doesn't mean that there aren't elements of things you can't control out in the world, right? There are certainly going to be circumstances where young people go out in the world and they have little or no control over the way other people behave, the way systems behave, the way sort of their interactions with the world happen. And so I think there are absolutely lessons in this that will help people be more resilient to those things when we come out of it. I think that looks like this practicing of how do we find some control in the uncontrollable? How do we focus on what we can control? How do we focus on the things that that actually, you know, aren't dependent on the rest of the system to have an impact? I think one of the things that I've heard from a couple of coaches is, in looking for the silver lining or whatever, or really trying to focus on what can we control, they've said, you know what we can do that is safe and is only determined by what kind of effort we put in? We can really focus on fitness. We can really focus on strength. We can take up yoga as a team and work on core strength in a way that we've never had the time or inclination to do in the past. And hopefully that means that when we come back, we've been in control of this thing that will aid us in our goals when we get back to being able to focus on those goals. So I think folks who've felt like they can keep some control over some things and that they're able to focus on making progress have done the best, right? So even, you know, setting goals, even if they're not the goals that you thought you'd be setting for your team or for your individual players, in a way that feels like they're, you know, that young people can achieve them, or that your college athletes or yourself, that you can achieve them. I think that ability to be moving forward in a parallel process to where it feels like we're maybe not always moving forward in the pandemic, is really powerful, is really an important part of building resilience to the other parts of your life where it's not, where you're not able to move forward. And so, you know, if you end up in a job where you don't have control over the way your boss behaves, what can you be doing to increase your, you know, your own skills? What can you be doing to make sure that you're meeting your goals or targets at work? That feels like a real opportunity for a lesson. And like there's, you know, it's kind of parallel to this process of resilience building that happens in sport anyway.
Yeah, I think another framing approach that coaches have used that has been unique mm-hmm. is really emphasizing gratitude mm. and appreciation. You know, when yeah. it's been taken away from you and your practices that used to be so mundane and boring and, oh, we got to go back and do this again. All of a sudden, when coaches have had contact, you know, I remember one of my coaches in our program texting me and he said, you know, I would work my kids out at 6 o'clock in the morning in the school cafeteria just to get a chance to see him again, you know, and there's a perspective there, I think, that can be leveraged as well, you know,
sure.
because there are so many things that are, you know, as we've been saying, outside of our control. And I think it's a unique way to be able to teach that with our kids and our players when they do have the opportunity to come back together.
That's it for the first part of our conversation with Megan. Next week, we're going to be back to discuss how we as coaches can create an environment and we can model the behaviors that are going to help support our athletes, not just through the pandemic, but through all moments in sports, so that we're doing everything that we can do to help them to manage that stress in a healthy way. Meanwhile, head on over to weallcoach.com where you can learn more about Megan's organization as well as download their PDF, Why Trauma-Informed Sport is Vital. There's a lot of great tools and practical applications for coaches that they're helping to provide. So check out weallcoach.com.